floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you and the council for providing us with the opportunity to give you this progress report on Marine Recreational Information Program, and obviously this is very timely to your work at the moment. So we're going to discuss both the progress that we're making and the new methods that have been developed and have been discussed here this morning, initially from the science side and then moving into a management theater. And when I've kind of set the stage on the management side, then I'm going to hand off the presentation to George Darcy, who will provide you with detailed information on the results of the new estimation in the New England region. The Marine Recreational Information Program was established in 2007. It addresses the recommendations of the National Research Council's Review of Recreational Fisheries Survey Methods that was commissioned by NOAA Fisheries in 2005. The findings of the NRC review were recognized by Congress and incorporated into the reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Act with a direction to the agency to create a new system of surveys that improved accuracy of the estimates and addressed as and implemented as many of the specific recommendations of the NRC review as feasible. One of the kind of overarching findings and conclusions of the NRC review that I want to highlight going forward is this one, that identifying and eliminating the sources of bias is a fundamental requirement for the provision of reliable estimates. The NRC study essentially concluded in one of its kind of highest profile and most important findings that there is a mismatch between how we collect data, essentially the design of our surveys to collect data from anglers shoreside and dockside on their fishing catch rates, and how we use that data to calculate the estimates of catch based on it. The mismatch introduces potential bias into our estimates, and it's a result of a series of untested assumptions that are built into the estimation method. When assumptions are untested in a survey design, they can contribute potential bias and actual bias when, in fact, the assumptions are proved incorrect. MRIP responded to those findings by giving essentially its highest priority consideration to the development of methods to address the mismatch findings and the development of a new estimation method that corrects for the potential biases in our current MRFs-based methodology. Some of the assumptions built into our specific assumptions that are built into our methodology that create this problem are include assumptions that are and sampling practices that were designed to improve the efficiency of our program and to generate the highest return on investment in terms of the amount of data collected for the dollar spent. But in fact, we now find that those may have been penny wise and pound foolish, and we need to revisit some of the not only the methodology, but ultimately, as I'll get to, some of our sampling designs as well. For example, we have given consistently higher emphasis in our survey designs to sampling at high activity, or what we refer to as high pressure fishing locations, where we can collect more data. That incorporates certain assumptions, including the assumption, importantly, that catch rates at high activity sites are essentially the same as catch rates at lower activity sites. And that unverified assumption has proved to be probably the most significant in changing estimates as a result of applying the new estimation methodology. Some others included assumptions that the activity levels at fishing locations were the same over the course of an angling day, and we've been able to adjust for that in the new methodology. We also have allowed our samplers to collect so-called alternate mode data. On our site assignments, our actual sample design is specific to a mode of fishing. So when a sampler goes to a site, they go there to sample charter boats, or they go there to sample private boats, or they go there to sample shore fishing. And we've allowed them to collect data from other activities that might be going on for the sake of getting more data. What we found in this process is that that incorporates an assumption that the catch rates in that alternate mode data are the same as those for which the assignment was made. Again, an unverified assumption that we haven't been able to address. In that case, in the case of the alternate mode data, we have not been able to find a way to adjust for it in the new estimation methodology, so the method actually discounts and no longer utilizes alternate mode data, nor will we collect it in the future. By and large, the changes that we're making involve reweighting some of the data that we've collected historically to account for the differences. And the most significant example relates to the high activity and low activity sites. We have, in general, increased the amount of weight we give to activity, to the data that we collected at the lower activity sites. In many cases, this change in the weighting of the low activity catch rates results in the differences that are observed in the new estimates. A word about bias. The fundamental effect of bias on our estimates is to make them inaccurate, to make them off-center, off-target. By removing sources of bias from the estimation methodology, the expected effect is to move the center of the estimates closer to the true value. And having done so, having removed sources of bias, having produced estimates that, on the whole, are more accurate, then we can reliably invest on increasing sample size. And in increasing sample size, we will improve the statistical precision of the estimates, or in the example given, we will in the first step move the results closer to the target center. In the second set, we will group that cluster more tightly together to be more precise. Just a word about all this. The estimates that we do consist of two parts. There are point estimates of catch for the various species, modes, areas of fishing, geographic locations, and time periods. In addition, we also estimate, as I indicated previously, the precision of the estimate. Historically, we've expressed precision as percent standard error. Many of you are familiar with seeing that term, or PSE, in our estimates. In the future, we'll be continuing to report PSEs, but also a 95% confidence interval, as shown in this graph. The new estimation method does affect both the point estimates and the precision of the estimates. It's important for us to note that, contrary to a press release I saw this morning, we are not standing on the deck of a Navy ship declaring mission accomplished here. This is the first step in the process of improving our estimates and addressing the findings of the NRC panel. It's an important one. It's foundational. It addresses probably the most important recommendation of the NRC panel, and I say that because we've talked to the panelists and we understand the advice they've given us in this regard. But it is not the last step, and I'll talk a little bit now about some of the next steps before we go on to getting into the results of the estimates. Upcoming this year, and in fact, for the most part in the first quarter of this year, we expect to receive a series of reports on major MRIP projects that have been ongoing for the last couple of years. And I wanted to just highlight these and indicate where they may be taking us. In 2010, we conducted a year-long pilot project of a trip reporting logbook system for charter boats in the Gulf of Mexico at three major ports in Florida and Texas. And accompanied that with a dockside validation sampling methodology. The results of the Gulf pilot report are due out next month and will provide findings and recommendations that will help inform all of us collectively who are partners in fisheries management about what steps we would like to take in modifying the method in which we collect data from the for-hire fisheries. the accompanying and supplementing their change in the way we estimate angler catch data from our trip surveys is the need to also make some changes to the intercept survey sample design itself. This was pointed out both by the NRC panel and by the peer review panel that reviewed our new estimation methodology. Some of the sources of bias can be addressed in the reweighting, as we are doing, where possible, it's better to address them by eliminating those sources of bias in the sample design itself. We have pilot tested a new intercept sample design in North Carolina. The final report on that pilot project will be available before the calibration workshop that's been mentioned at the end of March, and we are already moving forward aggressively, working with our state partners in particular to undertake the various logistic steps that we need to take to reconstruct our intercept surveys for implementation next year. We have been undertaking a number of pilot projects of different approaches to getting angler effort data, alternatives to the Coastal Household Telephone Survey using angler registries. A synthesis report of those various pilot projects is in preparation, will be out shortly, and based on what the team has already learned, we've already started one major new pilot in the South Atlantic region. There will be another pilot of two different comprehensive alternative effort survey designs conducted this year. When they are complete, they will enable us to make the best choice about how to do effort surveys and an improved methodology going forward. Lastly, a report will imminently be released that was a report of what we've referred to as a timeliness project that flowed out of a workshop held in St. Petersburg last March. That report will make recommendations on how we might move forward with shortening sampling intervals and post-interval time periods for preparing estimates of recreational catch so that the managers will have data on a more timely basis and will be able to improve their ability to track catch during the season. The recommendations will also encompass some recommendations on forecasting based on interim data. So with these reports in place and others pending, many others, the big expectations are that a year from now we will be implementing the new dockside survey design, a new and hopefully final design for our effort surveys, and methods to, at least in some sample periods and some regions, deliver preliminary catch estimates on a more timely basis. Moving on to the results of re-estimation, and I'm going to ad hoc, I think, just a little bit in here based on the conversation I've heard this morning on some of our specific next steps with the re-estimation work. And again, I'm going to talk kind of at the summary level. This work affects the all of the catch estimates that we do in the Atlantic and Gulf from Louisiana to Maine. And in a few minutes, George will get into the specific results for the New England region. By and large, the removal of bias from our estimation methods does not result in a specific single-directional change in the estimates. Some of the new estimates are higher, some are lower, some are very similar. However, that's the point estimate of catch. The estimates of precision that we do make are uniformly less precise using the new methodology. That is not a surprise. The NRC report itself concluded that we were almost certainly overestimating precision in the old methodology, and certainly the work of the team that put this new method together verified that. What it does mean is that we now have an accurate picture of precision, and we also have the confidence that, as I indicated previously, that by increasing sample size, we can improve it, we can improve precision, and that what we measure in improvement will be real. Just a few graphs of very kind of randomly selected typical results. These are annual catch for the species over the entire geographic region over the time series, just to convey visually the picture of some are higher, some are lower, some are about the same. In terms of the magnitude of changes that we observe, most of the estimates on a stock-wide basis are not significantly larger or smaller than the original estimates. About 45% are 5% or less over the time series. Another 35% are less than 15%. Relatively smaller number, about 20%, show a net change of over 15%. Now, these are coastwide changes for on a stock basis and over the time series. If one looks at an individual year, or as Frank was getting at earlier, if you start to boil this down to looking at modes or smaller geographic units, you will see some substantial changes. The next table is just a summary table of some of the key recreational species identified by our regions in HMS as kind of the preeminent fisheries under management that folks will look at, just to give you a sense of how changes in your region compare to others. By and large, for the most part, these figures are based on landings in weight and calendar year. The exceptions are that the Gulf of Maine cod and haddock are on your fishing year, and I believe it's scup and summer flounder are in numbers, not weight. Everything else is in weight on that chart. Key observations. Every estimate that we make is impacted by the removal of multiple sources of potential bias in the estimation method. We are confident that the MRIP estimates are more accurate, even where some of them are similar to the MRF's numbers, because of the removal of bias from the estimation methodology. The majority of stocks managed using annual catch limits will not be affected, at least in the short term, and that's because the majority of stocks don't exhibit large-scale changes, particularly in the most recent years of the time series that we're looking at. Obviously, changes in catch estimates can affect stock assessment results and management actions. I think the last 3 hours is a testament to that, and that we may need to make changes in fishing regulations ultimately where there are significant changes in the estimates. To that end, we've been working with the regions on a transition strategy, and the key steps are as outlined here. First, to coordinate with the councils and their SSCs to review all available information pretty much on a case-by-case basis, to discuss where applicable the potential for changes in stock assessment schedules, particularly where in some instances there are some larger changes between the MRFs and MRIP numbers. Thirdly, to host a calibration workshop to develop the process for incorporating the MRIP numbers into the stock assessments. And I want to kind of stop here and supplement this with some more specific information based on what I heard you all discussing this morning. The calibration workshop is tentatively scheduled for March 26th through 28th. It is being organized by a steering committee that is chaired by John Borman. John, I think, is trying to set up a conference call of his steering committee for the day after tomorrow to nail down time and place. It will be done jointly and with the joint sponsorship of the CDAR program in the Southeast, and John Carmichael and the Southeast Center have been good enough to help us get this done. The terms of reference are drafted. They should be final after Friday's meeting, but they're pretty final now, and I can share them with the council at that point and would be happy to do so. I am hopeful that the results of the calibration workshop and the peer review that will follow will be done in time to help you all out. I'm hopeful, Paul, that it'll be less than 5 months. It could take that long. It kind of depends on the essence of the peer review. Another step in this process is, and I wanted to come back to this, that the re-estimation that we have done addresses the time period of 2004 to 2011. And we are using this methodology and will continue to use it for the estimates that we're producing this year. The reason that we stopped at 2004 is that the intercept survey design that was in use prior to 2004 differed in some respects from the current intercept survey design, and therefore there are aspects of the details of the estimation methodology that are not applicable to that earlier time period. However, it is possible for us to make some changes in our estimation methodology, essentially to rework some of the mathematical formulas to be applicable to that earlier intercept survey design, at least back to 1998. And the work to do so is tentatively scheduled by the Office of Science and Technology to be done later this year and to be completed by the end of the summer. And obviously, we'll continue to discuss that in the context of what I've heard here today and what I expect to hear as we go to the other councils as well. It is also possible, and the stock assessors have made it clear to us that the longer a time series we can deliver, the better, that we might be able to do an earlier period of time. We're looking into that. That would take longer because it would require yet further modifications to the estimation methodology, and it would require us to dig out earlier delivery files from our intercept survey contractors to do data to access the data and QA/QC it. Another point that I wanted to mention is that the estimates, the work that's completed for 2004 to 2010 is a complete reworking of the point estimates of catch and the proportionate standard errors. That work is complete. It's posted to our website, and it's done. What isn't done yet is some post-stratification modifications to the data, which are frequently necessary for stock assessment and even some management applications. We have been able to provide post-stratified estimates based on geographic subunits to both the Northeast Fisheries Science Center and the Southeast Fisheries Science Center for work that they needed to do, including the Gulf of Maine cod estimates. That work has been done, and the underlying methodology, the programming for it, is will be provided to the science centers probably within a month. So in the future, they'll be able to do this work on site and won't have to rely on headquarters to do it for them. There is also it's also necessary, and we've done this in the past, to provide us post-stratified estimates of analyses of length weight parameters of our recreational catch estimates. And I heard reference to that in this morning's discussion. In order to do that with the new numbers, we need to essentially write new programs that are applicable to the new estimation methodology. That work is underway and is expected to be complete, and both the products and the methodology delivered to the science centers by the end of this month. So that should not be a hindrance in any way, shape, or form. So that kind of brings me more or less to the end here. Just a couple of key takeaways. Obviously, the transition does have implications on all of us, stakeholders and managers and scientists alike. That we do have firm expectations that the calibration workshop will provide us with methods, not with new numbers necessarily, but with the methods to use to develop appropriate transitional processes for moving from the MRFs to the MRIP numbers, and that we expect that process to be transparent and certainly inclusive of the councils. Certainly we expect the council SSCs will help us play a role in the calibration workshop. So with that, I'm at a point of moving this presentation over to George to take on the numbers for New England, and then I think both of us will try to answer your questions.
Thank you, Gordon. My presentation will try to zoom in a little bit on what this means to the New England Council and its fisheries. I think some of what I've got in my presentation has already been covered this morning, but maybe there'll be some information here that will be new and interesting. I'll try to go through it fairly quickly, however. So for the New England Council managed stocks that are recreational stocks and therefore impacted by this new program, the ones that have MRIP estimated catch and effort data, in other words, the ones that use this kind of information in assessments, are Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank cod, Gulf of Maine haddock, Southern New England and Gulf of Maine winter flounder and pollock. Of those, only two have annual catch limits and accountability measures that are set by the council, and those are the two Gulf of Maine stocks, cod and haddock. We are in 2012 in a transition period, and during this year, the current angler intercept survey design, in other words, the MRFs methodology, will continue to be used through December 2012 to generate estimates. And at the same time, the new MRIP estimation methods that Gordon just talked about will have begun in January 2012. So both the MRFs and MRIP type estimates will be available through calendar year 2012. And both will be available to the councils to use based on their judgment as to which is most appropriate and which is the best available science to be used through that period. So fishing year 2011, May 1, 2011 through April 30th, 2012, will be the last full year of MRF's estimates available for the groundfish stocks. In fishing year 2012, which will begin this May 1st, we'll have the MRFs generated estimates only for the first part of the year through the end of December, and then thereafter only the MRIP estimates will be used. Looking more specifically now at the MRIP cod, Gulf of Maine cod information relative to the MRFs estimates for the same time period, and here again we're talking about 2004 to 2011. The MRIP catch estimates are lower in all years except for 2006, and were substantially different for calendar year 2010 and fishing year 2009, which is what we talked about earlier, where that wave two in 2010, which is in fishing year 2009, appeared to be considerably different between those two estimation methods. As far as the range of the percent changes in landings between the MRIP estimates and the MRFs estimates, they range from 58% lower under MRIP for fishing year 2009 to 9% lower, which is the preliminary fishing year 2011 estimate. And the range of changes in discards is 9% higher in fishing year 2006 to 56% lower in 2009. This illustrates this graphically for Gulf of Maine cod. This is weight in pounds and from 2004 to 2011. And you obviously see that in fishing year 2009, there's that anomaly between the two estimates. This is the same information but expressed in numbers of fish for the same time period, and you see the same kind of pattern with a fishing year 2009 difference there. For Gulf of Maine haddock, the other stock for which you have ACLs and AMs, the MRIP catch estimates are lower in most years relative to the MRFs estimates. Again, there's a substantial difference for calendar year 2010 and fishing year 2009 based on that wave two information in calendar year 2010. And the range of percent changes in landings goes between 63% lower in fishing year 2004 to 9% higher in fishing year 2005. The range of percent change in discards is 41% higher in 2008 to 51% lower in 2004. Again, looking at this graphically, the first slide here is in pounds. You see the 2009 difference again. And the same, looking at numbers of fish, a similar pattern. This again is Gulf of Maine haddock. For the other stocks that the council manages, the ones that do not have ACLs, the changes, looking at it as an aggregate between 2004 and 2011, for Gulf of Maine winter flounder, there's a 5% increase under MRIP. For Southern New England winter flounder, there's an 11% decrease. For pollock, very small change, a 3% increase. And for Georgia's bank cod, a 30% increase. So for those additional species and stocks, in other words, other than the Gulf of Maine stocks, there is a year-to-year variability in the re-estimated MRIP data, both in direction and magnitude, and it varies from one stock to another. There are a few large percent changes in both directions, both increases and decreases. A large one, notably, is for Georgia's Bank Cod, which is a 157% increase in 2008 relative to the MRF's estimate. So the implications are basically twofold. One having to do with setting and monitoring ACLs and the other stock assessments, which has been largely talked about already. For ACL monitoring to date, all of your ACLs have been established and monitored using MRF's data, obviously, because that was all that was available until essentially last week. And as I said earlier, beginning in fishing year 2012, this won't continue to be an option because you'll only have MRF's generated estimates through December of 2012. How the MRIP estimates for ACL monitoring are applied while the MRF's estimates are still available, in other words, in 2012, will probably require some additional discussion at the PDT level, possibly at the SSC level. And again, both sets of data will be available to the council to use as appropriate and as appropriately justified as well. I think we've covered a lot of the potential impacts to stock assessments. I think it's clear that incorporation of the new information isn't trivial. It's a major undertaking, has a lot of different aspects that need to be considered, and could potentially influence many assessment components. It's not merely plugging in the new numbers and turning the crank and getting an answer that's entirely informative. And it should also be understood that the effects of incorporating the MRIP data are not entirely predictable. Just because the magnitude or direction of change is higher or lower doesn't necessarily mean there will be a corresponding change in the catch levels that might result, for example. The incorporation of the MRIP data is going to require a vetting process for assessment use because of these complexities, and the calibration work that's being done clearly is part of that. I think Gordon already covered this. There's some additional work that's required before we can fully use the time series of data that goes into most of the assessments prior to 2004. The re-estimation possibilities that Gordon just mentioned that might take us back to 1998 are still being looked at, and the calibration workshop in 2012 is as he described it. So that completes my report, and Gordon and I can try to answer any questions you might have.
Council members, questions? Start with Glenn and then to Mark.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. This probably is not answerable, but just curious, quick estimate, if you can. How much would this data, if it was injected into the plan now, change what we're looking at, which I know is really a long question. Thank you.
Well, that's largely what we talked about this morning in terms of the sensitivity analyses that have been run to date and this longer-term effort that we'll be beginning on to see, you know, how it's appropriate to use those and what the results would be. So we're going to have to wait to see what the answer to that really is.
Yeah, thank you. It just looks like, briefly, that the numbers are lower, so maybe that will help.
Well, again, it's hard to draw a conclusion just by looking at the graphs. There's a lot that goes into it, including potential changes in the size and the size frequency information, which isn't reflected at all in this, and which, as Gordon said, will be available at the end of February. But that's something that would be important to the impacts on the assessment results.
Mark Gibson.
Mr. Chairman, Gordon, you've been real clear about the 2004 to 2011 estimates, the need for the re-estimation, correction of bias and so forth. But you also talked about the additional enhancements that are coming on, that will be coming online. Do you foresee that there will be a need to revisit the 2004 to 2011 estimates once an understanding of how these improvements have affected prospective estimates for an additional alignment of consistency? I don't know that I've heard that before, because we're talking a lot now about trying to get two periods lined up, and there may be another alignment coming down the road.
Mark, that's a real good question, and it's kind of a two-part answer. The re-estimation method lends itself to going back to our legacy data and recalculating estimates based on use of the new methodology. The other changes in surveys that we're making will only really affect the way we collect new data and will not be directly applicable to the earlier time series or to the legacy data that we've collected. So we don't anticipate doing, as we've done here, essentially a recalculation specifically of previous estimates. That said, one would hope that in the process of developing and pilot testing these methodologies, we gain insight about how they might affect or might have affected the estimates. What, if any, are the identified biases that reveal themselves in that process? Within the terms of reference for the calibration workshop, there is provision for taking a look at this stuff and to hopefully examine such results as are available of the projects that I outlined, and to make recommendations about what to do in the future, both retrospectively and prospectively, with that effort. It may well be difficult. It may well be that our pilot tests don't reveal much in terms of obvious directional changes or differences between our current methods and the methods that we're pilot testing. We'll just have to see how that works out.
Other council members? Doug Grove, just so that people know, I am going to try and wrap this up by 12:45. But anyway, we'll continue on with the questions. Doug?
Just a couple quick questions. I think they probably would go towards Gordon. And just remind me of when you anticipate having that re-estimation back to 1998 done?
I think the current schedule is by the end of the summer, Doug.
End of summer. And this would also include some recalculations of the leak frequencies that are associated with these two?
What it does is it enables us to, I mean, we can do this now for the existing data that we have. There are methods to examine the length frequency aspects of the data that we have. When we change the estimation methodology, those methods are no longer applicable. We have to essentially write new programs, new SAS programs that will enable us to do the same analyses of length frequency There's no reason to think, and that's what we're delivering by the end of this month for the current time series and the current estimation equations. We should be able to do the same thing for the next group of years when we deliver those estimates, again, we're currently planned for the end of the summer.
Anyone else on the council? Start at that end, Rick, Mark, and then I think Dave Gaethel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gordon, at the beginning of your presentation, you pointed out that a lot of the changes in MRIP are, in fact, going to be incremental, and they'll reflect the ongoing pilots as they're developed and their output is considered. You spoke earlier about trying to incorporate some of the outcomes of the St. Petersburg workshop and the data timeliness questions. In addition to that, though, at what point would the program begin increasing sampling frequencies or increasing intercepts? Because it seems to me that that's going to be key to reducing some of the variability in the results. Is that going to occur over the course of this year, or are you going to wait until more of the output from the pilots has been incorporated?
Rick, we're actually thinking about increasing the sample size on the intercept survey this year. That's an ongoing discussion. Hopefully by the end of the month here, we'll have something to say about it. We have some funds that we can apply to it. There are challenges not only for ourselves, but also for our partners logistically in doing that, but that currently is something that we hope to do this year. Looking forward, looking to next year and beyond, you know, this is kind of a complex process. We've always said that first we redesign our surveys and fix the flaws, and then, having done so, having essentially rebuilt the house and making it structurally sound, then we expand data collection in a variety of ways to address customer needs, and those include increasing sample size to improve precision, increasing and improving the timeliness of the data by moving to one-month sampling waves and some other things in some regions, and increasing coverage. There's a lot of interest in covering earlier sampling waves than we do now on the Atlantic coast and even increasing the geographic coverage in some areas. All of these things are going to have the trade-off, and we will have to evaluate those trade-offs. One of the recommendations of this timeliness project report that I referred to that's going to be issued shortly is to develop a simulation model tool that will allow us to quantitatively evaluate these kinds of trade-offs and to do that this year so that when we're ready to make those investments next year and beyond, we'll have some supporting analysis. And I think that makes good sense, and we're probably going to try to do that.
Mark Alexander.
Thank you. I guess I'll direct this to George. One thing that stood out was very striking in your presentation there, where you had the graphs that were comparing the MERS methodology with the MRIP methodology, was the difference in the estimates in 2009 for both cod and haddock. I'm wondering if somebody actually took a look and tried to figure out what it was about the intercept data or the treatment of the intercept data that resulted in such a disparity for both species in that year.
Yeah, that's one actually Gordon will have to take.
Sure, Mark. Yes, as a matter of fact, we did. We expect to post a technical report on our website that will go into the re-estimation stuff and at a technical level, and it should be available to you shortly. That will include some analyses that have been done on where we've dug down into the, you know, what's behind the numbers kind of thing to understand what drove the estimates in certain instances where they were driven to when we redid them. You should have, in your handouts today, a four-page fact sheet that we just released with the re-estimation method, which includes a summary of four of those analyses, one of which is Gulf of Maine cod, or Atlantic cod, I believe. I don't think it's stock-specific, but the conclusions are the same. When we looked in detail at what was affecting the cod estimates, what we found essentially was they were being driven by the private rental mode estimates for Massachusetts. And it was a case where the average catch rates for the low-pressure sites, when upweighted on using the methodology, resulted in, because they were lower, resulted in reducing the estimates. And that's not inconsistent with what we've seen in some other cases. There's also an example there for Gulf of Mexico or West Florida red snapper, which is exactly the opposite. In those cases, the catch rates for red snapper in the low pressure sites were higher than they were in the high pressure sites and resulted in a slight overall time series increase in red snapper estimates. So, you know, that's kind of how it worked. And when the technical reports gets posted, John Foster's much more detailed analysis of what I just said will be available to you.
Dave Gaethel.
Two quick questions for George. Are we going to use these revised numbers from today going forward?
Well, as I said, during this year, this calendar year, both will be available to you. Both MRFs, the final year of the MRFs estimates and the first year of the MRIP, new MRIP estimates, both will be available to the councils to use. But I think you're going to need to take a close look at what's most appropriate. And use the PDT and perhaps the SSC to do that. After that, there's no choice but to use the MRIP data.
Okay, my second question is, if we do use these, and I can't tell really from looking at the graphs, but as an example, if this drops the Gulf of Maine haddock recreational catch below the ACL, do we still need the accountability measures that we just instituted for May 1st to reduce the bag limit on haddock?
The new estimates do drop you below the new MRIP estimates do drop you below the point where we would have had to trigger the accountability measure. Of course, we didn't have those at the time that we did that assessment. So that is something we can take a look at, whether we still need the accountability measure. We do, I think, have the authority to change that, but it's going to take some time, but we will look at that.
Okay, thank you. For the recreational people in the audience, you make note of that. It could be very important to you.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience for a couple of questions, Bill.
I don't have a prepared speech on this one. Sitting here for the last 3 hours, 4 hours, it appears that the data that we're dealing with, every speaker so far has talked about incorrect data. We're going to change it. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. If this was my first meeting ever, I'd say you're off to a good start. 14 years later, we're still changing data, trying to figure out if the cod stocks are any good for the fishermen. The data is flawed. You've got our lives in your hands, and we're sitting here as a sheep's going to slaughter, waiting for somebody to make a decision. And I'm listening to all this bad data. If this group worked for me, I'd be like Donald Trump. I'd fire all of you. So this is just a council meeting. The council only makes suggestions to National Marine Fisheries Service. So, Sam, this one's for you. This is your question. These people aren't going to answer what you guys have already answered, I think. In our hearts, we believe that NOAA's already made their decision. And we're listening to all this bad data, and it's very, very frustrating to be here to watch what's going on. Year after year after year, this is not my first meeting. It's not my first confrontation with the council. Many, many years we've spent at these meetings, and it doesn't sound like it's getting any better. We've lost 60 to 70% of the commercial fleet. We've lost probably 30 to 40% of the charter fleet. And in the economy, you probably lost 30 to 40% of the recreational people. And we still have a stock that's going down. Look at all the pressure that's been relieved from the buyouts. And we still have a fish stock that's in crisis. Everybody that talks, it's almost like you have a good feeling when you talk about a crisis. Oh, yeah, we have a crisis on our hands. We have to deal with it. We don't see it as a crisis, gentlemen. We're out there every day. There's a lot of commercial fishermen that will tell you they have a hard time staying away from the codfish. The charter boats do not see a downfall on the codfish. In fact, it's probably some of the best fishing in 2011 and 2010 that I've seen in 35 years. So to us, common sense applies here. Something's going wrong. We feel like we're going to get railroaded here. Environmentalists are going to win out. The charter boats and the commercial fishermen are going down the tubes. It's not good. And we don't have a good feeling about it. So it's time to look at the data, put a little common sense in it, go out with the people that are fishing day in and day out, look at what we catch. Don't use our VTR reports for 14 years. That makes no sense to the charter boat people. I talked to Mr. Grout about that this morning. It's because we can't rely on our reports. Well, if we can't rely on them, but they're mandatory to fill out, somebody ought to make those reports good so that you can use the data and say, this is exactly what the charter boat fleet caught. We have numbers we're applying 5 fish, 10 fish, 3 fish, 2 fish here, 9 fish there. We're down to 9 haddock. We're applying it to what number? We don't even have a grasp on the number of recreational fishermen that are out there. But we're going to apply a number to it. We've gone from all those numbers of fish right down to where we are with a chance of closing the Gulf of Maine. That doesn't only affect us. That affects this hotel, Kittery Trading Post, all the people that sell fishing gear. It's a heck of an economic impact, gentlemen. And we're using data that we don't even know. Right here, the last man that talked, George, you did the same thing. Data. We're going to change it. We're not sure if we can use it, but we're going to redo it. We're going to redo a program, and then we're going to run a model. The models are out there on boats. All you have to do is get out of the offices, get into the real world, let us show you what we're catching. Come on out with us. Put the people on those boats. Go with the commercial fisherman when he's trying to set a net, and all he catches is codfish. Come with us when we're catching codfish in the spring, in the fall, in the summer. That's what you need to do. Not tell us there's no codfish. We believe there's codfish there. But we're hearing from the council and from NOAA right from the top. And I don't want to mention her name, but it's an environmentalist. And that does not make us feel good. We are recreational fishermen. Environmentalists have been after the hunters and the sportsmen for years. And now we got one in place. That's the scary part, gentlemen.
Take one more public comment. Back to the council. Seeing none, we will break for lunch. I want to make one announcement on the afternoon agenda. The first item, a summary of the Northeast Multispecies FMP Amendment 18 scoping hearings. First of all, that is merely a report to the council on what happened at those hearings, the attendance, et cetera. The public comment period is still open on that until the 1st of March, so there will be no public comment concerning that. And we are going to move that, since the vast majority of people are here for the Gulf of Maine cod issue, we're going to move that to the last item on the list. So if everybody could be back for lunch at 2 o'clock, we will get cranking on the afternoon agenda. Thank you.